Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 5, Episode number 6 of Cinematica. My name is Dan Slevin, and here with me in the Cinematica studio for today is...
Kaylee!
Hey Kaylee, nice to have you here, just the two of us. Due to operational difficulties, I think, the bus service would call it, operational difficulties. There's only the two of us and I'm really late. This is basically it. I'm really late, so Simon's had to go.
I think he's rushing off to get ready for the soccer game.
Yeah, but you know, if I was here on time, we would have done this by now,
oh.
Wouldn't we? Anyway, so apologies to all of the Simon fans for that. But as he pointed out, he hasn't seen any of the films anyway, so he would not really be contributing much today.
And we can just add a track of him breathing.
Yeah, or eating.
Yeah, we have a bunch of that.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
Now, also contributed to by the mad rush to get here, there was no script for today's show. So, in today's episode, we have the fifth... I keep wanting to call it the fifth element.
No, it's not. It's definitely not. And I'll get into that later.
Right. Ugh. It's called the fifth...
Estate.
Fifth Estate, with Brandon Cumberbatch or whatever his name is. And
this is what happens when we improv the show. Dan just falls apart. He's too distracted. He's excited about the soccer game.
Yeah, exactly. And the sunshine.
Mm.
I took the roof off the car coming in.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so exciting.
I'm suffering from heat exhaustion from being in a sauna.
Yeah. Is this the studio slightly cooler than your normal office?
A little bit, but not much.
No, okay. Mm. So we've got the fifth estate. And what else?
Carrie,
that's right. We've both seen Carrie.
Yeah.
And I also did a bit of catching up this week and saw Thanks for Sharing and One Chance and half of Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa.
I'm excited for that review.
Yeah. So, look, before we get too deeply into things, perhaps we should have a look at the mailbag.
Yes, indeed. Lots of... good feedback this week, so thank you for all of our Twitter fans and followers.
Some really good two-word reviews coming in, and I'm really stoked about that. And often they're coming in before I've seen things as well, so they're giving me, you know, pointers to what to look for.
Mm-hmm. Kiwi Frenzy says, finally listened to season 4, episode 26, after seeing Gravity 3D. Glad I ignored all before watching and agree with your review. Two-word review, AV delight.
I do think... I'm really impressed by the people who have the discipline to not listen to shows where they think that they're going to be spoilers, but then remember to go back to them. That's fandom, as far as I'm concerned, and I applaud you.
We love you for that. Thanks, everyone. Fred Thompson, two-word review for Thanks for Sharing. Surprisingly insightful. Not as dark as Shame, but does well to get you thinking on the subject. And also, his two-word review for Bad Grandpa, really stupid. Few laughs, beauty pageant scene. I guess a few laughs in the beauty pageant scene, but still felt dumber walking out of the cinema.
This is not a million miles away from my response as well. I would point out that... whoever Fred Thompson is, mystery Twitter person, if you're the kind of person that would pay money to watch Thanks for Sharing and Bad Grandpa in the same week, then you are a truly dedicated cinephile. And again, applause to you too.
And also, one more from Fred Thompson. Filth, two-word review, Magnificent McAvoy. The most fun I've had watching a character that I absolutely detested. Dirty and twisted. Fred Thompson, you are so onto it.
Yeah, we should get you on the show.
We should.
So let's look at what people have been spending their money on for the last 4 or 5 days or so. We've got the 4-day MPDA countdown, and we might use this as an opportunity to actually talk about a few of the films that we're not going to do a full review for.
Mm. Yes, which we can easily do in the results this week. So coming in at number 5 is Carrie.
Okay, yeah, we're going to do that one properly in a little while.
And at number 4, One Chance.
Right. Now, One Chance, this is a film that is about as manipulative and as obvious and as seen it all before as anything else that you that could have possibly come from the Simon Cowell stable. Like this is you know, when people sign up to do those X Factor's Got Talent sort of shows, right? Those Simon Cowell talent shows, right? One of the things that they sign away with their contract is they sign away their life rights. Okay, so effectively, not only can filmmakers if you have a particularly good story, filmmakers can turn your story into a film, but they also have the rights to make stuff up and add it to your life to make it better for the purposes of movies, right? So you basically, if just for entering the competition, you are effectively giving the devil himself access to all aspects of your life. Now, Paul Potts was a cell phone salesman from Wales who had some training as an opera singer but hadn't gone very far with his career. He turns up for Britain's Got Talent in 2007, I think, and just blows away the competition with Ness and Dormer. And this is the story of how he gets there. His bullying at school. This is sort of Billy Elliot, actually, is what this
but
film
not
is.
Not as good.
Not as rich, not as politically interesting, not as layered as Billy Elliot, but effectively probably a little bit funnier, I suppose, if the jokes weren't recycled jokes that we've seen so many times before, like somebody stalking somebody in a supermarket and being forced to buy the first thing on the shelf beside them, and you know that old, really old jokes like that. The best thing about One Chance is, he said, doing a quick IMDb search for cast names, James Corden is the English actor who plays Paul Potts in the film, and he's quite a well-known face from television.
And theatre,
exactly. He was the star of One Man, Two Governors.
Mm-hmm. And History Boys. Live,
and the History Boys, that's
which
right.
Which did huge box office here in New Zealand, surprisingly, before my time in New Zealand.
But the best thing in the film by a long way is a woman called Alexandra Roach, who plays his girlfriend and later his wife, and the rock in which like his entire life is built on. She's absolutely fantastic, and the film really comes to life when it's just the two of them and their relationship, and you totally believe in her and you believe in them, and you sort of you root for them when you see the two of them together. And actually, when at the giant sort of climax of the film, I'll confess to you that it did provoke a little sort of tear in my eye, but it was for her, not for him, because I wanted her to be happy because she was so staunch and so much of a supporter for him. And so, like, that's a name to look out for, Alexandra Roach, as the sort of main lead in One Chance. Julie Walters is in it, and Julie Walters is Julie Walters. Cole Meaney plays his dad, who's a steel worker, sort of gruff steel worker, the antithesis of an opera fan, and less successful Mackenzie Crook, who you might remember from The Office, the TV show,
is the sort of Caribbean.
And Pirates of the Caribbean. He's the sort of light relief. Not really much going on that's going to surprise you at all. And apart from the fact that it's got the Simon Cowell machine behind it. With all of that firepower, you must wonder, like, do we really need to see this on a big screen? No, probably not.
I think we're going to ask that question a few times in today's episode.
Yes, we are.
Right. In at number three, down from two, is The Butler. I like this doing the list and then
people who are interested in our take on The Butler should listen to last week's show.
And speaking of last week's show, we did promise to do a Cinematica extra that we had recorded back around the film festival and repost it, but it was never posted at all. But people have listened to it because it was downloaded, because it just wasn't posted on the website.
Oh, we didn't post it on the website.
No.
We just gave the link to the film festival. That's
yes.
Right.
So after some searching, that has been posted. So it's up there right now on the front of the website. And it will be sort of just below. Once this is posted tomorrow, it'll be sort of in the list on the front page.
Right, that's the interview with Musa Saeed, who's the director of Valley of Saints. And a really interesting interview it was too.
And he was nice enough to retweet tweet our post about last week's show where we talked about Valley of Saints as well.
Yes.
So thank you. All right. Number two opening. Number two this week, Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa. And Dan, you have a half review.
Yeah.
Or a full review for half a film.
Well, I won't pretend that these Jackass films are my taste, right? They are obviously somebody's, because here they are, straight mm-hmm. in at number two. But I go under sufferance, really, to all of them. I don't like seeing innocent people made fools of, which is really all that hidden camera stuff. I don't mind the stunty stuff of the Jackass films quite so much, because that's people who've put their hand up to say, yeah, I'll do that. Hit me in the face with a frying pan. Hit me harder. That's what the stars of the film do. But the hidden camera humiliations of ordinary citizen stuff does nothing for me at all, which is why I was never a big fan of Borat and Bruno and those films, because I think if you're going to take the piss out of people on the big screen, make it people who are already powerful or famous or have somehow earned the right to have this sort of stuff done to them, not ordinary citizens. Anyway, that's what this film is, basically. It's Johnny Knoxville from Jackass, a character that was first introduced in the last Jackass film. He's plays an old geezer in very convincing elderly man makeup who is forced to look after his 8 or 9 year old grandson because his daughter supposedly is going to jail because she's a crack addict. So this is a joke in the world of Jackass, right? And so he's trying to get him across country so that he can leave him with the boy's father, who's a similarly useless lump. And well, what can I say? There's a lot of setups that would have taken an enormous amount of elaborate hidden camera placement, stunt preparation and positioning. And you can imagine that they would have been in various locations, maybe a couple of days, in order to get the 2 or 3 minutes of reaction shots or whatever they need to make the gags work. These films are all created in the editing room. There are 3 editors credited on it. It just seems like this is not my style of humor, and I personally, it all came from MTV, it all came from television. It should be back on television. I don't see that this is a particularly cinematic thing, at least they've tried to wrap a story around it, but it's really just an excuse for us to watch Johnny Knoxville be really repellent towards ordinary people and risk harm to himself in various stunts.
And what's the format of it? Because if there's a story, is it all? Because I've only ever seen bits of their television series, where it's just this sort of documentary of stupid antics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is there is this sort of wraparound story where we are introduced to him, his wife. When we first are introduced to him, he's in the waiting room of the doctors, and the doctor comes out, or the hospital, and the doctor comes out and says, I'm sorry, but your wife has passed away, and you're supposed to feel sorry for him, but instead he is very, very happy at this. And of course there's somebody, an innocent bystander, sitting beside him, and whose reactions we then see, right? And this is I'm explaining the joke,
right?
and as all joke explanations, it's not as funny as watching it, although this is pretty close. So you get, and then we're introduced to the kid, and then there's the funeral where disaster strikes at the funeral, and then he tries to drive him across country to the son. This is about the point where I had to leave. Now, I should tell you that I didn't leave because I was disgusted. I didn't leave because I was having major issues with the film, or I wasn't particularly enjoying myself, although I wasn't particularly enjoying myself. It takes a lot to actually drive me out of the theater. I had to leave because I had to go up to Brooklyn for the 8:30 screening of Thanks for Sharing, and I simply couldn't make all of it fit together. And I figured this is how
sorry, Johnny Knoxville, Mark Ruffalo's calling, I have to go.
Well, what would you do in my situation?
I would have done what I did do, and that's not go.
Right. Well, I've got the general gist of it.
Yeah.
Shall we say?
So, and if you want to go, or if you did go and you enjoyed it or you didn't enjoy it, please send in your two-word reviews.
I just didn't do my two words for one chance. My two words for one chance would be seen it. And my two words for Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa would be dumbass.
Right, and in the number one position for the third week in a row is Thor: The Dark World.
And we reviewed that with our special guest, Darren Bevan, 2 weeks ago.
Yes, and I'm just going to make a wild guess and say that Hunger Games is going to be number one next week.
I think Hunger Games could probably easily go straight to number one based on midnight screenings alone. It is going
I'm tempted to go, but I like sleep, and it's quite long. So I think I'll just wait till Thursday.
It's getting into epic territory now, isn't it?
But I mean, the books are pretty epic. Like, it's dealing with some very, very serious issues. And the second book, which is split into two, like, we have three more.
The third
book is split into two.
Right.
So it'll be Catching Fire, then Mockingjay Part 1, and then Part 2.
Look, all I can say is that the vibe about the film is that it is actually really, really good. And I think I was sort of ambivalent about the first one, that, you know, I thought, as these things go, you know, it got an extra star for not being Twilight, basically. I'm actually kind of looking forward to it because I just have a feeling. And Jennifer Lawrence is super good, right? So, you know, it's got to be worth it just for that.
And it's got Philip Seymour Hoffman in it.
He owns the trailer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He plays a very important part in the series from the second book onwards. But if anyone's who's read the book, you know what's coming for his character. But he is very important. So,
all right. So Thor's still number one. And I think that should probably do us. We should talk about the first one that we talked about on that list, which is Carrie. So let's hear a little bit of that.
The other kids, they think I'm weird.
Carrie, favorite poem? Did you bring one?
I don't want to be. I want to be normal.
Wipe that smile off your face.
I have to try and be a whole person before it's too late.
Help this little girl see the sin of her days and ways. She'd made innocent. The curse of blood would have come.
It's not even in the Bible. It doesn't say that anywhere. If I concentrate hard enough, I can make things move.
Chloe Grace Moretz.
I love her so much.
Yeah, she's good, eh?
She's great. I just want her to be my best friend.
This is a remake, obviously. Carrie, for film that was pretty much legendary when I was a kid. Yeah.
Good old Brian De Palma, 76.
Yep, and Stephen King. Stephen King's first novel.
Really, is it?
Yeah, Carrie. Mm. And so the big question, why? Why do we need it? Why? What is the point of a new version of Carrie, apart from the fact that special effects are better?
Mm-hmm.
Well, different, newer.
There needs to be a film that you can trailer the new Paranormal Activity offshoot film that's coming.
Yeah, and actually there was a trailer for Insidious, the new Insidious as well, on the front of the one I saw.
Oh, yes, I shut my eyes during that one.
I'm losing track of all of these horror franchises, actually. I'm trying to work out whether I've seen the first one, whether I haven't seen the first one, who's that character. Like, they're all merging into one. They should do it like a Marvel and just bring them all into one big universe, and then we can set fire to them.
Did you watch Carrie 2? Came out in 2007?
No.
I was just wondering if someone has.
I would have been reviewing then. But I don't know if it did get a cinema release.
I don't know if it did here or not.
Look,
but anyway.
This is maybe one of those situations where I don't remember actually reviewing a film. So let me look up my own website.
Right. So I will tell you that Carrie, of course, is based on the Stephen King novel, as we said, remake of the 1976 film by Brian De Palma, not shot for shot. This one is directed by Kimberly Pierce, who I believe is known for Boys Don't Cry.
And actually I thought there were some interesting kind of parallels between those two films.
And nice to see a female director taking on sort of a female story. Julianne Moore plays Carrie White's mother, who's this crazy religious woman. And then there's some good-looking they're not teens, but adults sprinkled in. So what's his name?
John Travolta.
No John Travolta, but there's some others that are slightly recognizable. It is updated a little bit, make it a little bit more
For the YouTube generation.
YouTube generation. So, yeah, in the famous shower scene at the beginning, they take a video of her and then upload it to YouTube. And then that gets screened at the prom before she goes on her like, crazy telekinetic rage. yeah, it's interesting.
But the beats of the story are basically the same.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. Like, I knew going into it because the original Carrie is pretty cheesy. Like, it's funny. It's really, really campy 70s quote-unquote horror film. And this one, I felt, I don't know if on purpose, but it keeps quite a lot of the camp. It's not scary. There's nothing really terrifying that happens. And I was saying to my roommates afterwards, it's like, you know, ghost stories and like Insidious freak me out, but I don't know anyone with telekinetic powers about to go on some sort of rage. So I think I don't feel scared by these and zombie films. I'm like, oh, I'm fine. It'll be fine. There's no zombies. My biggest issue with it, well, I had two issues. One, the continuity of her hair. Not very good.
Oh, so
she has sleek hair and then it's puffy and then it's sleek and puffy. And also I find Chloe Grace Moretz is just too pretty for the role. You know, it's like, yes, beautiful people do have weird parents and come from strange backgrounds, but the fact that
she's being positioned as the weird outsider girl is actually really insulting to her as an actress and as a person, you know, like she is beautiful. So what are you trying to say? Because she doesn't look like a supermodel.
No.
You know?
And Sissy Spacek was quite pretty as well, but she was sort of freckly and very thin and a bit like gaunt in the film.
And,
so she had this.
And
sort
she
of
looked like some otherworldly, like she looked like she didn't belong.
Mm.
Whereas Chloe Grace Moretz doesn't look like she doesn't belong in a high school.
No, and she goes to the prom and she's smoking hot.
Yeah.
And it's like, what?
Yeah, I know. So exactly. So how is it that everybody in that room can't see that? Still wants to make fun of her. You can't buy that.
No. But it was a lot of fun. I had a really good time watching it. So.
Yeah, I sort of did too. Although there's a regular listeners will know that I have this theory that it sort of doesn't matter how good the originals are of any of these films, is that you can't make the kids go and watch the original Carrie now. They're not going to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're going to introduce the kids to that story, you've got to make it again. There's no choice. Like, every generation needs its own Jane Eyre. Every generation needs its own Wuthering Heights. So it appears every generation gets its own Carrie now. So, but on that basis, I thought it was pretty well made. Judy Greer, very good as the gym teacher. I thought she was fantastic.
Nice to see Judy Greer in like a starring role as well, you know.
Carrying
a bit more of a character behind her.
Yeah, exactly. Lots to enjoy about it, and but in the end, will I remember it in 2 weeks' time? Nah, probably not.
I thought this might be my new like Halloween tradition film. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, seeing as you have a very limited palette to choose from of what is acceptable to you when it comes to Halloween, yes, you probably do need some.
It could either be a double feature with the faculty or just fully replace the faculty. It depends on how I'm feeling on the night. The faculty is my go-to Halloween film.
Right. Which I don't know. I don't know that
one. You haven't watched the faculty. We are doing a Mean Girls faculty double feature. High school double feature.
Right.
It's going to be great. It's just amazing.
Okay, we really do need to actually lock this in, don't we, at some point. Okay, fair enough. So do you have two words for Carrie?
My two words for Carrie are puberty blues.
Oh, that's too good. My two words for Carrie would be, Travolta-less. Just in case, because, you know, that was his first film, the first Carrie. What? I know that my two words are getting worse every week. All right, now, this is what we do. This is what happens when we don't prepare the show properly, isn't it? Time for some news.
Yes. Sort of a nice tie-in with the next film that we will be reviewing, which is The Fifth Estate, the film apparently about Julian Assange, is last week we tweeted, or I guess retweeted, a article or email exchange between New Zealand director Costa Botas and someone who was hosting his film on a site. If you haven't read it, you really should take the time to go through. I don't have any excerpts, but it's pretty amazing. And it's Costa trying to convince this host that piracy is wrong and he's damaging sales to the film and it's not helpful for filmmakers. Whereas on the other side, this person who's uploaded this film believes that piracy is encouraging film sales, and people who pirate films are the ones who spend the most on DVDs and ticket sales and all these other things. And it's an interesting debate between two people who refuse to move on their opinion.
Yeah, there's that too. And you know, I'd like to say that I've given up engaging with people on the internet on this particular topic, but I can't, because I still do, and I probably lose friends and lose followers as a result of it. But the other thing about that debate between Costa and the anonymous blogger is that this blogger, he didn't get what I think is the most important moral force in the argument, which is that it's not up to you. You know, it doesn't belong to you. Therefore, you know, it's like if I write something, I get to choose where it goes, where it gets published. Somebody can offer me money, and I can choose to turn them down or not if it's not enough. But or I can post it for free. I can set the terms of a Creative Commons license and allow people to republish it if I want, or they have to credit me or whatever. But in the end, nobody gets to take what I've created, put it somewhere else, and say, and then tell me that they're doing me a favor, right? Doesn't matter about whether they have the best of intentions or not. The fact is that they don't get to choose. And this should be the case for, you know, any work that anybody does. And whether you think that it's wrong that corporations are in control of this stuff, or that somehow the territorial way that the film industry is broken up, you don't agree with, and you don't agree with how things take so long, or that maybe rights get tied up in various knots. And, you know, in the end, it's not your choice to step in and somehow do the filmmaker a favor, right? Ask them. Ask their permission. Seek them out. Contact them. Ask whether they would be into it or not. Some filmmakers may say yes. Some, like Costa, will evidently say no. But don't presume to have the filmmaker or the artist or even the owner of the work involved's best intentions without checking in advance with them, because you don't know what they might want. You know, there are times when filmmakers or creators maybe don't want a particular work to go out. They don't like it anymore, or, you know, it was a bad experience. They had a divorce in the middle of it and they don't want to be reminded of it, and they want to suppress it for some reason or another. Well, that's entirely up to them. It's not your... Just because you want access to a particular work of art, if it's suppressed, it's suppressed for a reason. I went out with somebody once, right, who was an artist, and she wished that she had the power as and the profile as an artist to be able to audition people before they bought her work, because she would much rather know that a piece of work that she'd done was going into a particular home with somebody who would appreciate it. And she hated the fact that she basically had a deal with her dealer, and the deal with the dealer meant that it would sell to whoever would come up with the asking price for it. And it ate her up inside, knowing that somebody who didn't really get her work might own one, you know. And I could see that was like her expression. She wanted to be able to choose. And why did people think that have that arrogance to think that they know better? That's, you know, the way I would argue. So it isn't just about money, and it isn't just about access. It's also about people thinking that they know better than the artist.
Exactly. A follow-up to news that we spoke about on last week's show is a double victory for Weinstein Company as MPAA changes rating for Philomena from R to PG-13.
Yay! That happened almost immediately. I'd like to think we played our part.
Yes, plus Harvey wins plenty of bonus PR.
Yeah, exactly. I found a little piece of news which came up during the week, and that is that and people who made that there was a really interesting documentary that came out about the history of the Bond franchise. It was made to coincide with Skyfall, and there was quite a long section in that about how Thunderball was ended up being owned by a different company. And which is what allowed Sean Connery to come back to do Never Say Never Again without having to work with the Broccoli people, etc., etc. Anyway, kind of complicated, but the rights to Thunderball have now returned to Dan Jack, who is the actual owners of the rest of the Bond world, and that means that a couple of the important people, characters in the Bond universe that they didn't have rights to, they now have rights to again. Blofeld, for example, is one of the great Bond villains, but couldn't return for any of the Daniel Craig films until now because they didn't have the rights to that character. And
who's going to be cast as that character?
Well, that's let the Gerard speculation Butler. Begin. If only. And of course, Blofeld is the leader of the mysterious Spectre organization, and of course, now Spectre can come back. But
does he usually go up against organizations? I'm not familiar with the Bond universe.
Usually there is, yeah, it's usually either a government or organizations, yeah. And so Spectre. But as I said to somebody in a tweet just the other day, like, I'm really excited about Blofeld and Spectre coming back as characters and organizations. But can we please sort out? Can you finish off Quantum? Can you just, like, because there's unfinished business there. The Quantum organization, they're out there running the world, as far as I can work out, without anybody paying any attention to them. One nefarious, shady criminal organization at a time, please. Bond.
Maybe they can just re-release Quantum with, like, bonus features.
Or just 5 minutes.
That include like a 5 minute scene of them just being taken down.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
It.
Boom. I would be happy. I would be able to sleep at
closure.
Night. Yeah.
Closure.
Exactly. All right. Talking of nefarious, mysterious, shady organizations, it's time to get under the skin of the WikiLeaks organization.
Man is least himself when he talks in his own person. But if you give him a mask, he will tell you the truth. Two people and a secret. The beginning of all conspiracy. More people and more secrets. But if we could find one moral man, one whistleblower, someone willing to expose those secrets, that man could topple the most powerful and most repressive of regimes.
Julian Assange, notorious real-life media figure, the guy who started WikiLeaks. There's been a documentary about...
There's been lots of documentaries.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was one in the film festival, wasn't there, that I saw, which I think covered this ground in immense detail, considering we're only talking about like 4 or 5 years' worth of actual real-life history. And now there's a feature film, fictionalized version of this story called The Fifth Estate, starring Benedict Cumberbatch as Julian Assange with the white hair and the Australian accent, and Daniel Brühl, who just played Niki Lauda, playing another real character who was the German, young German guy who helped with the technical side of the setup of WikiLeaks. So How does it fare for you, Kaylee?
I went in with... I didn't really have any expectations because I haven't seen any of the documentaries. I know about WikiLeaks and then the Iraq stuff and all those, you know, things that made them really put them on the map. But coming out of it, I just found it a bit problematic, and because the film is very stylish but in sort of a 90s hacker kind of way.
Yeah, lots of like character scribbling around on the screen. Yeah,
yeah, and lots of
click, bold, click, 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 keyboards.
Lots of bold text and projection, and but the main issue is more that it's, I mean, WikiLeaks was founded in order to get the truth out there, unedited truth. And here you have a film that's a fictionalized film that's been dramatized and is really only sort of like a one-sided truth. So it's quite ironic that it's been presented that way. And I understand documentaries being made because, I mean, it's part of very sort of like massive thing that's happened in recent history.
And there's no doubt that he has not changed the world, you know, the way he said he wanted to.
Mm. But I don't think that it merits a dramatic representation yet.
No, or this the yet, I think, is the key thing, right? Because it seems to me that this story is not over.
No, he's still in the Ecuadorian, living in the Ecuadorian embassy in London.
He hasn't been brought to justice for whatever crimes he may have committed against women in Sweden. And the changes that WikiLeaks have brought about in terms of the rest of the world and diplomacy and the mass media or what have you, we're still filtering exactly what they might mean, and the world is changing so fast. It just seemed to me that we got the first two acts of a three-act story, and the final act, we don't know what's going to happen to it. I thought also that the fact that the film really didn't deal with those accusations against him and didn't... It sort of addressed the character flaw that may have led to whatever happened to him in Sweden, whether it was rape or whether it was not rape. And you can see that he has a particular attitude towards women, which is not helpful to him or his cause. But actually, the film has a similar attitude in that there are no women of any subsequent of any consequence in the film. And, you know, all the women that appear are either hot for him, hot for Daniel Brühl, or sort of giddy journalists who can have the wool pulled over their eyes. You know, like there's no women of substance in the film.
There was that one...
the Icelandic politician woman. Yeah.
But really she should have had more screen time.
Yeah.
You know, if she was that important in that sort of...
Yeah, I just think foundation. That it's avoided that major question about his life.
Yeah, and in the end I came out feeling like this wasn't really a film about WikiLeaks. This was a film about unrequited love between Julian and Daniel. And yes. Daniel was burned, and there's that whole like emotional scene, and he does
the breakup and the betrayal, and
it was horrible what he did. I thought that was absolutely horrible what he did to Julian in the end. And but it's like, you know, I guess that's just the way they roll.
It's a frustrating film. It's not a particularly satisfying film dramatically. One, I guess, positive aspect out of it would be Cumberbatch as Assange. I thought that
it was a quite
remarkable impersonation.
Mm.
And having just recently watched the documentary, Assange's voice was in my head, and he got it, just nailed it. Like whatever training Cumberbatch had, he's got a fantastic ear, and whoever did the hair, bang on.
Mm.
Perfect. So
the 10 coats he owns.
Yeah,
always wearing a jacket.
Yeah. So disappointing, really, because I just think that this is a story that you're absolutely right isn't ready for big screen dramatic telling. We just don't have the perspective on it yet to know what it means.
Yeah, and I don't know who the film was for either. It wasn't like it seemed to maybe be a bit pro WikiLeaks, but in the end it clearly wasn't, because if it was, they would have tried to have Julian Assange like involved. I have a letter here. I did lots of research today.
Oh, good.
And I watched a few interviews with Julian Assange that came out just before The Fifth Estate was released, and he was saying, it's like, you know, the only person who approached me about this was Benedict asking to meet, and I said no. And I have the letter, some highlights from that letter, but also the fact that even if it was pro WikiLeaks, he pointed out that it's this huge money-making corporation that's making this film, but they're not contributing any money to WikiLeaks at all and not helping them at all. It's just like, it's like a smear campaign for them.
It's it's weird, isn't it? Because you can tell that the aims of WikiLeaks, the filmmakers are sympathetic to, and the targets of WikiLeaks, the film are sympathetic to that, to the fact that they are targets. And there are a few scenes with Laura Linney and
Stanley Tucci.
Stanley Tucci as American diplomats. Scratching around, trying to retrieve this chaotic,
and that's the stuff that seems
crisis
so
situation.
Ridiculous to me. I was like, this seems so weird and falsified. Like in this movie about WikiLeaks, I was like, what?
Yeah, exactly. I just think that it doesn't get the balance of the story right. It doesn't really have point of view right, and and you're right also. It seems very, very old-fashioned in terms of its idea of computers and technology and networks as being this strange, mysterious, magical world that ordinary people should be a little bit afraid of, you know, and that only people with the
it's
keys.
Very underground.
Yeah,
in Berlin.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of that technology stuff just didn't ring true for me at all. It just seemed like somebody who doesn't really understand computers trying to explain computers to some other people who don't really understand computers. Anyway, look, yeah, this is another one where you go, like, there are so many great films, right, that are not being released to cinemas. They're not coming back from film festivals. They're not coming back. They're not being given screen time. Why couldn't we swap one of those for this one? And you know, I would have been perfectly happy. You know, I know we don't talk about home entertainment here, but just the other day I was watching Side Effects, Steven Soderbergh's film, thriller about the antidepressant industry and the doctors who do the prescribing. And you know, I found myself thinking halfway through it, and this is a very telling sort of thought, I reckon, is that, you know, I thought, you know what, this is probably too clever to be released at cinemas here in New Zealand, isn't it? You know, and I caught myself and thought, what? What have I just thought? No. Anyway, but it is, it's good, and you think, well, that's as good as anything else that's been, that has actually hit big screens here. I just want to put in a word. Actually, we'll do two words for Fifth Estate, and then we'll move on to Thanks for Sharing, because I do want to recommend that to people. So do you have two words?
I think my two words are not necessary. And in the show notes, I'll put a link to this email that Julian sent to Benedict.
Great.
Saying why he did not agree with the movie being made, because I think it was very insightful and very intelligent.
Right. Well, I'm going to also have a not as part of my two words, and mine will be not finished or not over, either or. Take your pick. Now, we didn't mention this last week, even though it came out the week before, and it seems to be not getting the widest of wide releases. But Thanks for Sharing is a film about sex addiction and the sort of Sex Addicts Anonymous group counseling sessions that addicts go through. And Mark Ruffalo is the central character in it, as a handsome young guy who has really been struggling and is now 5 years sober in terms of his addiction. He meets Gwyneth Paltrow at a party and she turns his head, so there's that strand of the story going. Tim Robbins is the sort of father figure of the group, while he seems to have his own life very much in order, his addict son comes home and he struggles to rebuild that relationship. And Josh Gad, is that, have I got his name right? The guy from, he was in the he played Wozniak in the Steve Jobs movie.
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, he plays an emergency room doctor who has a problem with inappropriateness in almost every aspect of his life, whether it's rubbing up against women in the subway or attaching cameras to his shoes so that he can look up his colleague's skirts. Anyway, so he's been court ordered into this recovery program and is really struggling with the requirements of it. I would point out that there's one more character in it, probably best known to the world as Pink. What's her real name as an actress? You know.
Oh my gosh, it's totally just left me.
Look, here we go. Thanks for sharing. I'm looking it up. Thank you, IMDb. And her name is Alicia Moore.
There you go.
Real name is Alicia Moore. And I tell you what, she's really good.
Really?
Yes. In fact, everybody in this is really good. Like, this is a film that I'm... the kind of film that I'm a sucker for, right? Which is good but flawed people trying to do the right thing but somehow having to overcome obstacles that are not of their making, you know. That in classic dramatic sense, you've got protagonist and you've got an antagonist, but the antagonist isn't a villain or a supervillain or Norse god or whatever, right? The antagonist is themselves and their addiction. And I love watching films about people trying to make themselves better, you know, and seek redemption, you know. Like, I'm just a sucker for that sort of stuff. So in the same way that Bad Grandpa is a film that I am absolutely the opposite of a sucker for, this is, you know, it fits me like a glove, this film. And intelligent performances, some really, really good dialogue, a really astute understanding of addiction and the whole Addicts Anonymous structure of recovery, and respectful of that process, and yeah, just like really good. I came out of it and a really, really good soundtrack, actually, featuring the Mountain Goats and Billy Bragg. There's a use of a Billy Bragg song at the end, which is so brave because of the choice of song, and so appropriate about where they place it. All I can say is that, you know, this is a film that I reckon deserves a much bigger audience than it's probably going to get because of where it's been released. It's had a very narrow release. It's co-written and directed by a guy called Stuart Bloomberg, who I reckon is a name to look out for. And actually, look, clicking on his name at IMDb, you'll be pleased to know, or interested to know, that in development, Slapshot. Presumably that's a remake of...
Slapshot.
wouldn't that be a remake of the ice hockey movie? The famous ice hockey movie?
Yeah, Slapshot.
Yeah. But he also co-wrote The Kids Are All Right. Do you remember that? Which
yes.
was really super good.
I watched that just recently, actually. Took me so long to see it.
It's good though, eh?
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. Again, good people.
Julianne Moore being sort of like not... This is what I love
not
with Julianne.
A complete wacko.
Yeah, well, that's what I love Julianne Moore, what she's doing right now. She's just sort of playing roles her age and not being glamorous and beautiful and doing these things. She's sort of in these ugly roles. And it's great. She's just like, yeah, I do what I want. I'm Julianne Moore. I'm like one of the most beautiful people in the world, whatever.
All right, we're going to wrap this show up. I'll give you two words for thanks for sharing, and that is good people. And that is our show. Next week on the show, crikey, what are we going to do next week? Oh, Hunger Games, Catching Fire, I would imagine. What else? Filth? Yeah, looking forward to that. That'll
I don't
be
know
an,
if I
an,
am looking forward to that.
And that'll be an antidote. Fill the Void, I've got on my calendar. Is that, what do anyone remember what that
yeah.
one is?
Oh, sorry now. I do know it's coming out.
But you just can't remember
you know,
what it is.
And also Mud. It's coming out.
Yes, Mud, which was one of my highlights of the International Film Festival. And yes, really looking forward to talking about that one, particularly with Simon, because it's one I know he has seen.
Yay!
here we go. Fill the Void. Let me just look that one up and see if I can... where are we? A young Hasidic Jewish woman is pressured into an arranged levirate marriage to an older widower. Was that in the film festival as well?
Yes.
I think it was. Yeah. So there you go. That's next week's show. We're going to leave you with some music, which I haven't chosen yet. So
Billy Bragg. I think.
Yeah, maybe. Might be a little bit too much of a spoiler, actually, for the people who are actually going to watch the film. I might just pick the Mountain Goat song because it was so super good. But either way, you're listening to it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you want to get in touch with us, you've got various ways in which you can do it. So
you can find us on Twitter via @CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast, on Letterboxd as Cinematica, where you can find our 2-word reviews, and as always on our website at cinematica.co.nz.
And in addition, if you don't necessarily, you might be a bit shy, you don't necessarily want to get in touch with us, but we do recommend following us on Twitter or on Facebook, because we do post various bits of news that we find humour, and you know, if you're interested in the kind of things that we're interested in, then following us on Twitter would be a really smart move.
And if you tweet a really clever 2-word review and tag us, we will probably retweet it, and you may get a lot of followers.
We will make you famous.
We don't promise, but we can try. Pledge.
Pledge. A pledge is like a promise that you can sort of
non-binding
change your mind.
Agreement.
Exactly. That is our show for this week. Thanks very much, everybody. That's a good afternoon from me.
And everyone, hopefully you're enjoying the sun.
Yeah, and but when the sun goes down, go to the movies.
Yep.
The motor screaming out, stuck in second gear, the scene.